Welcome to Up to Date. I'm Steve Kraske. Well, here's Reason to Live number 132. The film Undefeated is out. It's the inspirational documentary set during a Memphis high school football season that won the Best Doc Oscar this year. And critics are just raving about it. That's just one of the art, independent, and foreign films we'll be talking about today with our film critics, and they are Cynthia Haynes, the film professor herself. Cynthia, welcome back.
Thank you very much.
Always good to have you. KCUR's own Steve Walker is here. Stephen.
Hi, Steve.
And Bob Butler, who works at the Kansas City Public Library and whose movie reviews you can see for yourself at butlerscinemascene.com.
Greetings.
Robert, how are you?
Great.
Well, let's begin today with the sale of AMC for $2.6 billion to a Chinese company. Cynthia, what's the significance about all this?
Well, we're trying to figure this out and what effect it's going to have on Kansas City. I think Bob has some information about it. The Chinese, in the last 4 years, have doubled the number of movie screens in their country to only 6,200.
I mean, they have 6,200?
They have that
all.
Many in Leawood.
In the entire country? You're kidding me.
Right, and they expect to double them again by 2014. So I'm assuming that they're interested in the technology because they had somewhat of an embargo on the number of American films that could be shown in their country. They increased that number if, in fact, those films would be in the IMAX format or 3D. And I think that's the future of these large metroplexes in addition to providing food. It's a very curious time right now. And companies that own the theaters have gone through bankruptcy. Several of them have in the recent past. They're so expensive now to upgrade to digital. I just don't know where the money is being made.
Is the technology that much of a mystery that the Chinese would need to buy AMC to get their hands on it?
Well, it may be. I mean, AMC is one of the biggest movie chains in the country.
It was number two, yeah.
Yeah, but, you know, up until AMC went digital, I couldn't see one movie at an AMC theater that was in focus. So, yeah, they've got the technology that's, what, 2.5 years ahead of China, maybe? The news that piggybacked on the sale was the fact that AMC said they want to divorce themselves from Cordish, and they co-owned the AMC Main Street downtown, which is a very pleasant place to see a movie,
It is, I would say, the single best movie theater in America.
I was going to say, you've called it that before. That's one of the great secrets
it's
of
fantastic.
That theater, right?
Yeah,
it is just a fantastic. The presentation, the seating, the butt kicker seats with the low frequency speakers.
I can live without that. But
when trains rumble by on the screen, you feel it
in your seat.
In your seat,
mm-hmm.
Literally your
literally.
Seat.
Literally.
So what's going to happen with the AMC Main Street
and the Midland, which they also co-owned with Cordish?
Well, now no one has said so specifically, but everyone in the Kansas City film industry I've talked to say that AMC will soon be out of the Main Street and it will be taken over by Austin's Alamo Draft House, one of the coolest theater chains the country.
Yeah.
In fact, I'm not even sure that they have any theaters outside Austin at this point. This may be their first one.
No, they do.
Because
just last week, I went back and visited that clip of that girl calling the Alamo Draft House in Austin and her
complaint,
profanity-laced tirade because they kicked her out for using her phone.
Mm.
So my kind of folks.
Yeah, exactly. No, I think they have several around the country.
But here's
they're
Alamo,
up-and-comers for sure.
Alamo Draft House, they will show current commercial movies, but their real forte has been bringing in directors and filmmakers and doing retrospectives and having special screenings and Q&As. They are huge in that. Austin has a very movie-savvy population.
Yeah.
They really enjoy that sort of thing, and I think this could be an incredible boon for the Kansas City movie scene if it happens.
Any sense of when we'll find out if it's going to happen or not?
Well, I have been told that sometime in the month of June is when everybody expects the trade-off.
Really?
If you see signs going up, you'll know for sure.
Right.
What we have seen is on Craigslist, Alamo put an ad in for a Kansas City staff.
That's telling.
That says something.
That's very significant, yeah.
And Alamo Draft House has they're sincere when they talk about supporting independent film. AMC is not. There's several on a couple of the screens now, and when Cynthia and I toured the new AMC downtown, we got that speech again. We're going to be devoted to independent films here and make this an independent kind of cool, hip place. No, they didn't.
No, no. You know what? Big chains sell McDonald's hamburgers. They do not sell handcrafted chocolates.
Yeah.
And they just don't know how to sell handcrafted
right.
chocolates.
Yeah, you know, it's funny. They picked up Best Exotic Marigold Hotel 2 weeks after the Glenwood and the Tivoli did mm-hmm. because it was making money.
Now, well, is there going to be a negative impact on local independent theaters?
You're taking the words out of my mouth.
Oh, so I hope not. Yeah. I hope not.
Well, you know,
why wouldn't there be, Stephen?
I don't know. I mean, that's something I hadn't thought of.
Well, the mm-hmm. the local, I always think that the fine arts people are out in Johnson County for the most part, and they are serving an audience that doesn't really like to go downtown to a great extent. You've got your Westport scene, and the yeah. Tivoli serves them very well, the UMKC students, Rockhurst,
right.
all that.
Yep.
I think this will expand it. The one theater I think might take a hit would be the Screenland Crossroads. The lease on that will be up in a year.
Hmm.
So you never can tell.
Mm-hmm.
Although, as far as I'm concerned, the more independent film you got, the better you're in, better
sure.
shape you're in. So.
Sure.
Well, this is quite a coup for Kansas City's movie-going public, then.
It could be spectacular. It really
yeah.
could. Alamo Drafthouse, one reason this works so well is that they already have a kitchen and a drink staff and everything going on at the Midland. And that's what Alamo does. That draft house part is not, you know, they serve food and beer and, you know, chips and...
And 16-ounce drinks, too?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
but,
all those good
but,
things.
But, you know, it's very much a sit-down, almost a put-your-feet-up-and-enjoy-the-show kind
great.
Of atmosphere.
Yeah. Well, big news there, perhaps, about the Alamo Draft House, perhaps coming to downtown Kansas City. Okay, some films opening up today. Monsieur Lazare.
Opens at Mansoor. The Tivoli.
Very nice.
Monsieur Lazare.
Très bien, Steve. Yeah.
This is a film I absolutely adored and highly
about.
Recommend.
Yeah.
It was a nominee for Best Foreign Language Film this last year. It's set in Montreal, and it's about an Algerian immigrant who's hired to replace a teacher. And there are issues of race and culture that affect his relationship with his students. And I thought it was a delightful. It's not a particularly heavy film. I think I've read, but profound at the same time. I mean, it's the director used a very, very light touch in creating this delightful story of a man. And I'm reluctant to give too much of the plot away because something happens at the beginning of the film, and I knew what that was, and that
right.
affected the way I saw the rest of the film. So
I think we can say it. It happens in the first 3 minutes. Is
that
okay?
Well, but it bothered me that I knew that.
Let's just say that.
Maybe not say it.
Yeah. I won't. But a couple of the students, and we're talking like fifth grade.
Yeah, these are kids.
They walk in the classroom and discover something shocking.
Right.
And this other teacher has to come in, replace the other teacher.
And pick up the pieces.
Pick up the pieces. And this movie's about, like, undefeated in first position, a couple movies we're going to talk about today. The movie's about the resilience of kids.
Yes.
Kids are more resilient than we give them credit for. They're more resilient than me.
But at the same time, they feel a lot that they may have a hard time expressing.
Right.
And that's a big part of this, too.
The movie stars a French or an Algerian actor, Mohamed Feleg, who is a star and is in Algeria.
He's actually a stand-up comic.
Is he really?
And there's a young actor, Emilien Néron, who plays a young boy, Simon, in the film, who is absolutely wonderful.
Mm-hmm.
And so many cases now, and Kid with a Bike, that's a prime example of casting the right child in the
mm-hmm.
part. And I feel that's the case with this movie also.
Bob, at ButlersCinemaScene.com, you gave this film a B.
I did.
Why not an A?
Because I wasn't overwhelmed by it.
Mm-hmm.
Now, you know, this is almost a visceral call for me. If you're going to break it down intellectually, you can make some pretty boring movies seem like wonderful experiences.
Mm-hmm.
For me, it was, how did I feel coming out of it? Well, I was moved. I was entertained. Was I floored? No. So it's a solid recommend.
Steven?
I liked it a lot. The other thing it does that's interesting is brings up a conversation about can teachers in this litigious age touch their students, like hug them when they're sad? I mean, and there's a couple parents who are like, you are not his parents. You know, you have no business talking to
him. It goes even a little bit further. They deny him the right to even discuss this traumatic thing with his class.
Oh, right.
Leave that
right,
to the school
right.
psychologist. So what do you do when a
right.
kid is obviously suffering in front of you and you can't even broach the subject?
Hmm. So it got me in the heart and it got me in the head for some of these issues it's talking about. I highly recommend it.
Sammy, very light touch, very special film.
Yeah. Okay, three thumbs up for that one. How about For Greater Gloria, Cynthia?
This is a faith-based film. It's taking a lot of hits. It's trying to be somewhat of an historical epic, and it doesn't quite meet the mark. It's a fictionalized account of an historic event that I wasn't even familiar with, that occurred in Mexico between 1926 and 1929, known as the Cristeros War, when the Mexican government attempted to secularize the country and persecuted Catholics. The movie was financed by a Mexican producer and also partially by the Knights of Columbus. I think it's a story that's worth being told. 56,000 people lost their lives during that war. Andy Garcia plays an agnostic general who's hired by the Cristeros rebels to lead their little army against the Mexican government. Mauricio Curi plays Jose Luis Sanchez, and in 2005, Pope Benedict beatified Jose Luis Sanchez and a dozen other martyred Catholics who participated in this uprising. Peter O'Toole is in it. He plays a parish priest. His performance is worthy of the role of a pope and not a parish priest. Way over the top. Ruben Blades plays the Mexican president Plutarco Elias Calles, an anti-Catholic. And Eva Longoria is terribly miscast as
from Desperate Housewives.
From Desperate Housewives.
Eva Longoria.
She plays a very religious Catholic wife of the character played by Andy Garcia. Excellent production values. It's much too violent for young kids. And I thought it should be the kind of movie that a family would be able to attend. And I don't know what their target audience is. I really don't know. It's pretty obvious that Dean Wright is a first-time director. I think he just sort of lost touch or control over telling the story, that there was just way too much exposition in these conversations throughout the film, a lot of talking and not showing.
Soon to be seen in parish basements everywhere.
I think so.
Is that right?
Well, I think it's made to every Catholic church in America is going to have a DVD of this in its library. That's just...
What'd you think of the film?
I haven't seen it.
No. I didn't see it either.
Yeah, okay. We have a clip, though, Cynthia.
Yes, we've got Andy Garcia. I want to thank Greta, our new intern, for the suggestion. This is Andy Garcia as Braveheart, inspiring his troops as they're going off to battle the Mexican government.
From the film For Greater Glory.
We are going to send a message to Caius and to the rest of the world. Freedom is our lives. And we will defend it. Or die trying. You must remember that men will fire bullets, but God decides where they land. Que viva Cristo Rey!
Do you suppose that'll work as a legal defense?
I'd like
fired
to
the
see
gun,
that
but God directed the bullet.
Parodied by Ron McGee's in the old late night theater, I think.
Yeah. Well, it does sound like Braveheart, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah, Mexican War Braveheart. Okay. How about some films that have already opened? Steve Walker, tell us about a film, Bernie.
I would be happy to. Bernie is on my three to see this week. It's director Richard Linklater's new film, and it stars Jack Black, who, out of his Kung Fu Panda pajamas, proves he's a great actor.
Really?
He's terrific in this movie.
Jack Black.
It's a true story about a gay-ish funeral home assistant director who all the widows in the town of Carthage, Texas are in love with. He smooth talks them, brings them chocolates and flowers and takes them to lunch, and he sings Amazing Grace, and he ends up hooking up, not sexually, but with Shirley MacLaine, who plays the crustiest, nastiest woman in this town.
Now, there's an odd couple for you.
Whose husband dies.
Shirley MacLaine.
I know. And they become sort of, he's like an escort. They go to Dallas to see opera. They go to Europe a couple times.
Yep.
And something happens halfway through the movie and it becomes a crime.
What you need to know
comedy.
Is the real life Bernie is now serving a 30-year sentence. So,
hint, hint.
There was a real life Bernie?
Oh, yeah.
Oh,
this is for real. And one of the great things about the way Linklater does this.
I know what you're going to say, yeah.
He has it narrated by the townspeople. Now, some of these are real actors. Some of them are just, I guess, real Texans. But the colloquialisms they use, the natural sense, that sort of down home humor. they are priceless. Yeah, it's a little bit like Sordid Lives in the sense that you get these small town eccentrics, but it's a fantastic way to tell this story in flashback.
I don't know if we can describe this as a subgenre yet, Steve, but we see a lot of documentaries at the True False Film Festival.
Right.
This whole idea of melding documentary moments with fictionalized accounts of events, and we're seeing more and more and more of that.
I think it was a great choice that he made. It's so entertaining. These people are loopier than he was, talking about how he his influence in town, and this one woman saying with her big long cigarette, I don't care if he was gay. He was a good guy. He was a good man. He sang well. This movie is really good. Blew me away.
There are laugh out loud moments. There really are.
Is Jack Black as good as Steve Walker just said he was?
He's
great.
Absolutely fabulous in this.
You know, there used to be an actor in the golden age of Hollywood named Grady Sutton. He was this plump guy. He was known as a specialist in sissy parts.
Oh, really?
Jack Black kind of does that here. But he walks that line so carefully that he never tips over into the obvious, which explains why he got away with so much in a very conservative town for so long.
Right. I mean, he confessed to the crime he served time for, but these townspeople
didn't want to believe it.
Widows are all there in the courtroom saying he didn't do it, he's not guilty. And we're going to hear a clip of Black, and you'll hear it in his voice, how subtle he does it, like Bob said. He's talking to the McClane character. They're sitting at their favorite Mexican restaurant. That's all.
I can understand chewing each bite of some food 25 times like chicken fried steak, but I don't think you have to chew your refried beans that many times. It doesn't really make sense. It's unnecessary additional work for your jaws. Think of your poor TMJ muscle. It couldn't be good for it. It's inefficient. Think about it. You know this drives me crazy. Please stop. This is like nails on a chalkboard to me. Okay, go ahead. Chew like that. Chew like that all day.
You know, every time you guys are around, we always wrap up the show with your picks for three to see, your top three picks for the week. Will this make your
list? Yes, it will.
And Cynthia?
Not quite, but it could.
You aren't going to make it unanimous. You aren't going to make it simple for people listening to this. Okay.
No, but Bernie's doing well. Emily, with our web person here at the station, said she went Saturday night, I guess, and said it was packed.
No kidding. People
are going to see it.
So if you're a Jack Black fan, you must see it.
Oh, yeah.
If you're not a Jack Black fan, for whatever reason, you'll go see it anyway.
So it's kind of a sleeper film, it sounds like.
Yes, pretty much.
Lingering out there.
Yeah. Okay. A comedic film noir sort of in the genre of Fargo, I think is safe to say.
And if you need more enticement, it's got Matthew McConaughey, who always gives his best performances for Richard Linklater. So
there you go. But
he keeps his shirt on this time.
Yes, this is true.
Sorry, Cynthia. Yeah.
Okay.
Let's move on, Bob Butler, to the film Marley.
Marley. Well, Marley is, of course, a documentary about Bob Marley, who is, although he died very young, some 30 years ago, left an imprint on the whole world of reggae music that is so incredible that no one has even come close to touching it. This was made by Kevin MacDonald, who you probably know for making The Last King of Scotland with Forest Whitaker, but he also made a good documentary a few years ago called Touching the Void about an ill-fated mountaineering expedition. It was quite a hair-raiser. Anyway, this is an exhaustive, and some would say exhausting, documentary. 2.5 hours.
Mm.
In some ways, it's absolutely a knockout. His cinematography, Jamaica, no travelogue has ever made Jamaica look this alive, this much color. You almost taste the air in it. It's such a well-made documentary. Mm. He talks to literally dozens of people who knew Bob Marley, and there is some limited footage of Marley himself. Most of it, though, is actually concert footage, which is fine because the man was incredible on stage. The drawback for me, although I like this movie, is that while I understand a lot about Marley's career now, I understand about Rastafarianism, the religion he adhered to, I understand about reggae music, the man himself is just out of reach as far as I'm concerned. I never quite got a handle on his personality, although you find out things like he managed to father a lot of children by a lot of women and things like that.
11 children by 7 different women.
I was going to say, the women in his life didn't know him either. Really.
Apparently, and in a way, maybe that's a Citizen Kane-like quality of this. a man who is, in a sense, unknowable except for that public persona.
Yeah.
Now, Scorsese and Jonathan Demme were both approached about doing this film, and I think it's as much as burnishing the reputation of Marley, and I think it was supported financially by people who were friends of Marley, and there's nothing wrong with that, and because I thought it was a very entertaining documentary, and I've heard the same complaints, Bob. The issue was once they decided to make the film, he died at what, age 37,
yeah.
I think it was, of
Is
cancer.
That what he died of? Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm almost surprised it took this long for a film like this to come along, given
exactly.
who Bob Marley was.
I'll tell you why, because they all got together and said, we knew Bob Marley and we will talk about this. Up to now, I don't think there was ever that consensus that people who
Very
knew
possibly.
Him were willing to go on
yeah.
record.
What
Very
I didn't
possibly.
Know is that his father was white and an Englishman and who was living in Jamaica. I found that really interesting and how his extended family kind of dealt with that. I think it's way too long. The movie's
Did you?
Way
yeah.
too long.
It worked for me.
90 minutes for docs are good. 2.5 hours is not necessary.
I wanted more concert footage, actually. I mean, we had too many clips of the concerts and not enough of the entire performances.
I was going to say, do you get a sense after watching this, are you reminded about just how great Bob Marley was?
Oh, yes.
Or,
oh, yes.
Yeah, I mean, there's no question about
that. His son, is it Ziggy Marley, mm-hmm. who's sort of followed in his footsteps and I guess is sort of carrying the banner.
His children are so beautiful.
Oh, they are. They are.
You know, the
You're
ones
right.
they talk to are really beautiful.
Well, does our clip have any good music in it?
In the background. Mostly these are friends of Marley talking about his early days getting in the music business.
All right.
When Robbie came back from the U.S., we decided to start our own independent label, Wailing Solemn. So we went in. And did Bend Down Low. Bend Down Low was the number one. We started to build our own economy. We used to ride with our bicycles and distribute the record to jukeboxes, sound systems, record stores with our bicycle.
The Wailers' music dominated the dance halls, but it was hardly played on our Jamaican radio stations.
Just want to mention, it is subtitled.
Because there's so much heavy Jamaican patois in this that it's really hard to understand a lot of it.
And it's only at Liberty Hall in Lawrence right now.
Right now. It played here earlier, but now it's at Liberty.
Okay, let's take a break. When we come back, we'll continue our conversation with our art independent and foreign film critics, Cynthia Haynes, Steve Walker, and Bob Butler. Coming up in our second half, we'll talk about Sound of My Voice. We'll talk about First Position and Darling Companion. I'm Steve Kraske of the Kansas City Star, and you're listening to Up to Date on KCUR. And welcome back. I'm Steve Kraske. If you missed our conversation yesterday with sports writer and commentator Frank DeFord, you'll find it in our weekend to-do list at kcur.org. Monday on the program, there's summer camp, and then there's summer camp for the future female leaders in government. We'll learn more about Madam President summer camp on Monday's show. This hour, we're talking with our art independent and foreign film critics about the latest films now showing in Kansas City. They are Cynthia Haynes, Steve Walker, and Bob Butler. And Bob, you're up next with Sound of My Voice.
Well, I'm a member of the Britt Marling fan club. She's an independent film's golden girl. Last year, she wrote and starred in Another Earth, a really fantastic love story with a science fiction component. She's come up with something kind of like that now. The Sound of My Voice is about a couple of independent filmmakers who infiltrate a religious cult. Mm. Britt Marling plays Maggie, a woman who claims to have been sent back from the future, Terminator style, to recruit people to go to the woods where they will survive a coming civil war. That will
is this
take place.
A documentary or
no? This is total fiction. Mm-hmm. The two filmmakers
you think
yeah. The two filmmakers say, well, this woman's obviously off her rocker. She's a scam artist. Let's expose her and secretly make a movie. So they go in and they go through the indoctrination of this cult. The young man. They're a couple, a man and a woman. The young man starts falling for her line because every time someone raises an objection, she has a plausible answer. At the end of the movie, we're in the position he is. You don't know if she's the real deal or totally screaming bonkers. And that's a very clever twist to pull on your audience.
What I really liked in the last half hour or so, I'm not giving away any plot points, just where it's set. It reminded me of Hitchcock and how Hitchcock used to set his climactic chases and scenes in famous places. Here we have the La Brea Tar Pits, this intense kind of emotional chase going on, a little girl's in peril. It's just wonderful filmmaking. I like the last half much better than the first. Yeah, I'm not a Britt Marling fan.
I'm a Britt Marling fan, but right. I thought that the Christopher Denham, who played the young documentary filmmaker, is a little charisma challenged. I could have used somebody with a bit more personality.
But that worked for that part.
I suppose it really did because he's the kind of guy who would get sucked in.
Yes, absolutely. It's a very small, quirky film, and if you're interested in independent filmmaking and something clever, something different, this might be a movie for you.
Did you like it?
Very mixed feelings when I walked out.
I liked the second half a lot. Britt Marling, to me, I think she'd be a crashing bore at a party. I just find her pretentious and not interesting at all.
Mm. That film, again,
Sound of My Voice. It's
mixed
worth seeing,
reviews.
Though.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah.
Bob Butler, tell us about Darling Companion.
Well, I got to tell you, I really, really like this movie. Possibly this is a function of age. Anyway, it's by Lawrence Kasdan, a director who's had his fingers in some great movies, including,
The Big Chill.
The Big Chill, yeah. This movie reminds me a lot of one he did about 20 years ago called Grand Canyon, and that was about Los Angelinos of different races and ages colliding. This is about a group of people who are drawn together by a dog, who I presume is the darling companion of the title, but you can't be sure. You've got various people. Most of them are in their 60s now. Kevin Klein, Diane Keaton are a couple who are, maybe they've been around together too long because they're kind of drifting apart. She finds a dog by the roadside, adopts it. The dog immediately starts transforming their lives. Her daughter, who has been prickly and disappointed in love, falls in love with the dog's veterinarian. Well, cut to summer. They are in the Rocky Mountains. The daughter's getting married. The dog runs off into the mountains. They can't find it. And everybody spends the rest of the movie looking for the dog. Even though the dog isn't on screen, it's still bringing people together. You've got a supporting cast of Diane Wiest, of Richard Jenkins, of whom I can say no wrong. The guy's great. Mark Duplass, who's also a filmmaker.
And Diane Wiest was in The Big Chill, wasn't she?
No.
Kevin Klein Chill. Definitely was.
Yes,
yeah,
that's
Klein
right.
was, right.
Who am I thinking of? Yeah.
Anyway, it's not heavy duty. It's lightweight. It's about people of a certain age sort of coming to grips with who they are and their relationships.
And a clip we have here, Bob?
You know what? I'm not sure what clip we've got here. Let's let her
know. Kevin Klein is meeting the dog named Freeway for the first. The dog's getting a bath by Diane Keaton.
He comes
character.
Home. He's a busy surgeon, and the last thing he wants to see is a dog.
From Darling Companion.
What's going on? Whose dog is this?
Mom, she saved his life.
He's not mine. I'm just going to find him a home.
Why is he here?
I just couldn't let them take him to the pound. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to call a few rescue societies tomorrow, and somebody's going to want him.
Yeah, but not us. Right? We're not getting a dog, right?
Well, I think we should keep him. I'll help!
You're at school. She's not going to come back every morning and walk a dog, and neither am I.
I wouldn't mind doing that.
Beth, I don't want a dog.
Well, I told you I'm going to find him a home.
Yeah, I know you.
And what's that supposed to mean?
That was Dr. Bula.
Who?
The veterinarian. He's going to stop by.
What is he? He's coming here now?
Yeah, he has some medicine or something. What? I'm going to use your shower, because it's filthy in here.
Veterinarian makes house calls?
He's very attractive.
Okay. I love Diane Keaton.
I love Diane Keaton so much. I read her recent book. I just think she's an incredible talent, looks gorgeous, and has not done any plastic surgery to her face. I am so sorry she is in this wet dog of a movie. I hated it.
Oh.
I hated the screenplay, and I love dogs. It just did not work for me.
So you're
at
saying
all.
You didn't like it,
if I'm catching
your drift.
It's dreadful.
He's used that same technique in The Big Chill and in Grand Canyon about bringing all of these couples together. We've done this before, but I just loved it. A.O. Scott, writing in the New York Times and reviewing the film, said, if you thought Marley and Me was too cutting edge, this is your dog movie. And it's sweet. It's as G-rated as you can get. And
there's some nasty words in it.
And you would recommend it? Or
yes.
Okay.
Yes.
Okay.
I would recommend it if you're stuck on an airplane on a tarmac.
Steve Walker.
Yes, sir.
First Position. The next film.
The last two films we want to talk about are both documentaries about young people, but in very different worlds. First Position is about a group of young dancers from all over the nation who are competing in the
the Grand Prix of dance.
Yes, it's the Grand Prix of Youth America Grand Prix in New York. They come from all over, and they're competing either for scholarships in the young kids' cases or in the older kids' positions in very prestigious ballet companies. In the same tradition, a Spellbound, the Spelling Bee movie,
Manhattan Ballroom.
Yeah, a couple others where there's all these different people from diverse backgrounds coming, all focused on one thing, and we're following them in preparation for this. I think it's a terrific movie. I really liked it. These kids are fascinating and just incredibly talented.
You know, it's a movie about sacrifice. You have, I cannot imagine what these kids go through. You have one young girl who admits that every day she wears out an $80 pair of dance shoes, toe shoes.
Oh, my gosh.
And how are these families doing it?
Right.
I mean, the sacrifices they make are unbelievable. And you've got kids who every day take off their shoes and have to wash the blood off their feet because from the pounding they've taken.
Right.
My God, I'm not dedicated to anything to that extent.
We've noticed, Bob.
There's a wonderful character named Aaron. He's 11 years old, and I got goosebumps watching him dance and also waiting for the announcements at the end of the film as to who received awards.
Goosebumps because?
He is so passionate. He's so charismatic. He is just a fabulous
dancer.
Well,
he's got it. He's like a little Baryshnikov.
Yeah,
the guy defies gravity.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And they're an American family living overseas because of his dad being in the service. And we're going to hear this lovely clip that says everything about little boys and dancing of him and his dad.
And you may have heard this something similar in Billy Elliot.
This is from First Position.
I don't tell any of my friends at school that I do ballet because in my old school I told them. But then everyone started teasing me.
A lot of men think ballet is not what it is. It's very athletic. Women have tutus and their pointe shoes. Men do masculine things. There's a lot of energy and focus.
We've heard lots of stories about boys that dance that get into junior high and quit because of the relentless teasing and the stereotypes. So far, he's strong enough to understand that those types of people are not worth listening to.
I'd like to see one bully try to dance like this kid.
Yeah, and that comes through pretty clearly.
Oh, yeah.
Just the skill and what's required here.
Absolutely.
Sounds neat. That film, again, First Position. Now a film that I mentioned at the start of the show today, Undefeated, the inspirational doc that won the Best Documentary Oscar this past year, set during a Memphis high school football season, Steve Walker.
It's Manassas High School in the poorest section of North Memphis. It's an all-African-American school. The team has not won a game in how many years?
I think it's like 10 years.
And
they haven't been in a playoff in 50.
No kidding.
This movie takes us into the lives of this team, mostly three young men, and their Caucasian coach, Bill Courtney, who to me is the hero of this film. These kids' stories are so painful and so tragic, and yet this man in their lives is, in many of these cases, the only man in their lives. And he loves them to death. And I don't like sports.
Mm-hmm.
But this movie, I think I cried three times just by how moving it is.
This man volunteers. He's not even a professional educator. He volunteers. He lets one of these kids, blindside style, move into his house with his wife and family. You know, you look at this guy and you think, where does he get the courage, the strength, the motivation to do this? Where did he even think he could make a difference in these kids' lives? And he's totally, totally beer belly, baseball cap. He's no screaming intellectual. He's just a guy who cares.
He owns a big business in the town. Right, lumber company, right.
What a great choice, though, to be the focus of a documentary like
Unbelievable.
This. Yeah.
That was the problem, Bob. Sitting there, all I could think of was a blindside. This is a nonfiction blindside. White man goes into the black neighborhood and it becomes a savior. Hoop Dreams, I thought, was a wonderful documentary. And I don't think this even holds a candle to a film like that. I was very disappointed. I was surprised it beat out Pina, Paradise Lost, A Tree Fall, If a Tree Falls in Hell, and Back Again for the Oscar, documentary Oscar, and it won.
And you're disappointed because...
Because I thought...
You'd seen it before.
I'd seen it before.
Yeah. Well, that's the concern, even hearing you describe
No.
No.
This film follows their season where they actually are doing well because he's inspired something in them.
Yes.
And we are also following not only the games and what's going on between goalposts, but a couple of them actually have chances of going to college and getting scholarships. And there's another kid named Chavez who... misses his whole sophomore year because he's in juvenile detention for his anger. And he comes back the next year, is on the team. His anger's not much more contained. And so the coach is dealing with this. And it's a fascinating portrait of young black men in our country and what their hopes can be, what their dreams can be, and the kinds of people who can make changes.
And, Bob, we have or have not seen all this before on the screen.
You probably have, but the fact is that you can't blame the filmmakers that truth turned out to be, in this case, a mimicking, you know, so much art.
Dan mm-hmm. Lindsay, by the way, who co-directed it with T.J. Martin, Dan Lindsay went to MU and graduated from there in 01, and they were at the True False Festival where this Undefeated was playing. But I think it's a tremendous movie.
So two thumbs up for it, one not so much. And what's the clip we have here, Steve?
The clip is gives you everything you want to know about this coach, Bill Courtney, talking to the boys.
From Undefeated.
The character of a man is not measured in how he handles his wins, but what he does with his failures. And tonight, we failed. And everybody says, when you get these inner city kids down, they'll lay over and you'll beat them by 40. Not us. Everybody will say, they're 0-1. They're going to fold up camp. They'll be 2-8 by the end of this thing. No! Not us. You walk with your chins up. I am proud to be a Manassas Tiger on this field night because my guys did lay down. They got heart. Now let's put our mind with our heart and our bodies and let's finish this thing this year.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow. Yeah.
Sounds scripted, but... Nope.
Yeah. Cynthia, you're still not moved here.
No, I'm not.
You're not getting sold on Undefeated. Okay. How about some local events coming up in just the days and weeks to come, Bob Butler?
Well, down at the library, because the All-Star Game is coming to Kansas City, don't you know?
Don't you know?
Our July film series in the Film Vault is called Hollywood Homers and Their Great Baseball Movies. This Saturday afternoon, we're doing Field of Dreams. The following Monday, we're going to be doing... something radically different, Major League, a really raunchy comedy about a baseball team. But we've got things like Bang the Drum Slowly.
A League of Their Own?
A League of Their Own is definitely in there. The Bingo Long Traveling All-Stars. We are covering a lot of bases. It's going to be a great film series. Check out the library's website at kclibrary.org. Also, the Shakespeare Festival is coming, the Heart of America Shakespeare Festival, to get you ready in the mood this Sunday, 1:30. Plaza Library, we're showing the 1935 Max Reinhardt, A Midsummer Night's Dream.
Mm-hmm.
Fantastic, fantastic film. And I have one more thing I want to recommend.
I was going to say, you have a request.
I have an idea. Mm-hmm. All right, KCUR listeners. You guys are movie literate. You wouldn't be listening to this if you didn't care. So I have a challenge for you. I want you to come up with some ideas for film series that we can do at the library. They can be about a director. They can be about an actor. They can be themed like the baseball series. They can be timed to a certain time of year, whatever. I'm at robertbutler@kclibrary.org. Send me your ideas.
Douglas Sirk. There's my idea.
robertbutler@kclibrary.org. We'll put that on our website.
All right.
And you want recommendations.
I want
good
recommendations.
Ideas from our
Come
listeners.
Up with some ideas for some film series.
Okay.
I want to alert people to returning to the Tivoli from the National Theater live series of high def broadcast of plays from the National Theater.
Mm-hmm.
Four more performances of Danny Boyle's Frankenstein. If you have not seen any of these National Theater live presentations, this is by far the one you should see. It's brilliantly directed.
Hmm.
It's incredibly interesting, steampunk kind of look at this story we all think we know. These actors are unbelievable. And one more side note, Danny Boyle is heading up the 2012 Summer Olympic opening ceremony in London. And he said just in the Kansas City Star this morning, he's becoming and he's inspired by this Frankenstein that he directed. So if that doesn't give you impetus, I don't know what does.
There's a version one and a version two.
There's the actors switched roles.
Oh, okay.
Every other night.
Does it make any difference?
No,
which one?
No. I saw both of them, and they're both wonderful as either the Frankenstein or the monster's creator.
So that's June 6th, 10th, and 13th at the Tivoli.
At the Tivoli, yeah.
Yeah, sounds great. How about The Tempest?
I wanted to mention that Tempest is going to be at Hollywood Cinemas in Lawrence on June the 14th, starring Christopher Plummer as Prospero. It should be a fantastic performance.
It's a Fathom event. It's going to be shown in Kansas City as well from the Stratford Upon Avon Theater.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's not what they call it, but the old right. Globe, maybe? I don't know.
And there's a gay and lesbian film festival coming up, too.
That's not till the 22nd, I believe. But go to the Tivoli website. You can find a link to what their format is going to be.
Okay. We just have a couple of minutes left until Victor Wishna joins us with a fan's notes. I wanted to move on to some films that will be coming out in the weeks and months to come. Coming attractions, if you will. What do you all recommend?
There's opening next week is a French film called The Intouchables. I'm the only one who's seen it. It's won all kinds of awards. It won the César in France for Best Actor. It's about a black man from the seedier sides of Paris who becomes the valet, personal trainer, handyman, everything to this man who's a quadriplegic, this rich man. It's really good.
Mm.
And it opens next week.
And the title is?
The Intouchables.
The Intouchables.
And for Wes Anderson fans, Moonrise Kingdom is opening shortly.
I've heard that is amazing.
It's supposed to be very good with Bruce Willis, Edward Norton, Tilda Swinton, one of our favorites, right?
Frances McDormand, another one of my favorites.
Okay.
And also Seeking a Friend for the End of the World with Steve Carell, Keira Knightley, and Melinda Dillon.
Well, I like the cast. That's
Linda Dillon.
Seeking a Friend for the End of the World. What has Steve Carell been up to lately?
Making that movie, and then he's making a movie with – he plays Tommy Lee Jones and Meryl Streep's sex therapist in a comedy coming out in August.
Oh, really?
What could go wrong?
Hey, has The Office – how has The Office fared without Steve
People
Carell?
Are not happy. I watched it, but
– I still watch it. I still
too.
Like it.
No. I don't like James Spader at all, so this season was kind of hard.
Is he leaving?
Yeah. Hopefully.
Hopefully. Do we know if he's leaving or not?
I think he is. Yeah.
I thought he's kind of an interesting guy.
Well, I'm not a TV reporter, Steve.
Well, I just count on you for these things. Yeah. Okay. What else is coming up that we should be looking forward to and reasons to live?
Well, you know, this may sound like heresy because it isn't on a movie screen. It's actually on the TV. But the wild runaway success of the History Channel's The Hatfields and McCoys over the last weekend reminds me of the fact that the best movies being made today aren't, in many cases, being made for the movie theaters.
Well, the best drama of the year is Mad Men to me. So
what you've got here is, well, even the made for, even the HBO and Showtime original movies, you've got a what do they call it, a business model where you don't have to sell tickets. They give you your money to make the movie before you make the movie, and then your hands are untied, and you can get away with all sorts of things.
People talk about the golden age of television. I think it's
right now.
It is.
Absolutely right now.
Hey, and, Steve, just to go back to Frankenstein, you're saying that's good for the entire family or for kids?
It's pretty dark, but it's visually, there's 15 different scenes that will just knock you out of your seat because of the brilliant design team that Danny Boyle surrounds himself with and his eye. He should have won Best Director for 127 Hours a couple years ago.
And the music is what?
The music is, it's not a musical. It's just, it's scored, though. I mean, there's the first, let me just give you a little hint. The first 10 minutes are
real quick.
The monster breaking out of this egg on stage.
Okay, and we'll list each of our panelists three to see on our website, kcur.org. Just check out the up-to-date page.